Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, that's the best selection of beer anywhere. You want to stock up for the weekend, Daytona 500's coming up. Water, soda, snacks. They roast the peanuts fresh and hot every day. And that pickle bar is second to none. It's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. It's the weekend. Let's celebrate. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 at Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. The Washington Capitals getting the job done.
Williams now, trading places with Carlson. Williams a drive, he scores! The puck through Greiss as Williams let it fly. Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, New York. Washington wins it in overtime, 3-2, with 43.2 seconds to go. Justin Williams gets it done for Washington.
John Walton, obviously a big fan of the Truman Show, as the Capitals win last night over the New York Rangers, and obviously got a big win.
I thought that exact same thing. Is he must have been a huge fan of the Truman Show.
My favorite part of the movie is when, of course, he's always trying to figure out, he always wants to leave, and they got to keep him there. And so he's in school. He said, I want to be an explorer. And the teacher pulls down the map and says, look, everything's been discovered.
Everything's been discovered. Why? Too late.
All right. That's right. Too late. Everything's been discovered. Okay. All right. Great to have you with us on this Friday. And let's bring in Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Reports, a day where Heath Miller has decided to retire after 11 outstanding seasons with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Tony, can you put into words over the years what he really meant to the Steeler offense?
I think he meant just about everything to Ben Roethlisberger, to be honest with you. This was a guy who not only, you know, Steve, when you look at his numbers in a historic context, he is right there with the most productive tight end in the history of the NFL. Only 11 other guys have as many as 6,000 receiving yards for a tight end. Only 7 other tight ends caught more passes in the history of the league than Heath Miller. So those two things certainly speak for themselves. He's the Steelers' all-time leader in every category as far as tight ends go. And he's second overall in receptions, in front of a couple of Hall of Famers. Now, obviously, you know, the game has changed. And if Heath Miller played in the 70s, those numbers would be a lot different. But his productivity and what he meant to the offense would not be any different. Those numbers reflect his role in the passing game, but it went so much further than that. He was as good a blocker, as existed in his era at that position. And, again, he did a little bit of everything. He was never flashy. He never complained. You know, he had a season where he caught 32 passes, for a season where he caught 75 passes. He acted the same. You would never know, by his on-field demeanor or off-field demeanor, whether it was a 30-catch season or a 70-catch season. He was that type of guy. And, again, I think he sort of personifies, what this team meant. And he sort of personifies the team over the past, well, frankly, 11 seasons.
I think over the last 11 seasons, I think you can argue, and I think you do with relative ease, he was the single best player at his position over that 11-year span.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. Over that 11-year span, certainly you could make the argument. There would be other good arguments as well, but you could certainly make it with him. A lot of guys, when they played elsewhere and then joined the Steelers, and I'm thinking of, Jericho Cotchery is one example, Ryan Clark is another one, Mike Mitchell is a third, guys who said, boy, we knew Heath Miller was a really good tight end, but until we got here and played with him, right, we didn't realize how good. Simply because, again, he wasn't flashy, and he did so much in the running game. And he meant a lot more to the passing game than just his receptions. You know, he was a good pass blocker, as well as, an excellent run blocker.
So a lot of people
did a little bit of everything, and he did it extremely well.
Right, and a lot of people talk about Gronkowski and so forth. Gronkowski's missed a lot of time in his career, and Miller showed up to work all the time. And Miller's a better blocker than Gronkowski. And Miller is, you know, Gronk is a nightmare matchup, without question. But in terms of overall consistency and all around play, I put Miller right there. You know,
Steve, I think, you know, and your statement over that 11-year period, the more it's sort of sinking in, I think at any time during those 11 years, if you ask defensive players in the NFL who are the best five tight ends in the league right now, Heath Miller would have made that top five, you know, most of those 11 seasons.
Right. I agree with you. I think, in fact, I wouldn't doubt he would have made it all 11 seasons, to be honest with you. Now, how, you know, with Spaeth and with Jesse James, are the Steelers now set up post Heath Miller, in your opinion?
For the most part, I think they are. You know, Matt Spaeth is a guy who is a very, very good blocker. You know, he'll catch a pass every now and then, but he's a very good blocker. You know, anytime they employ a two tight end set, they're going to be hard pressed to find a better guy to fit there. Now, you know, for Jesse James, this probably fast forwards him a little bit. To say that Jesse James will replace Heath Miller, those three words, replace Heath Miller, that's an awful lot for a second-year guy, particularly a hometown guy who grew up watching Heath Miller every Sunday. That's a lot to ask of a guy. But I think that Jesse James is capable of replacing him in the sense that he can be the Steelers' starting tight end. He grew so much as a pass blocker. Was a pretty good run blocker as well this year. And I think the Steelers ended up probably being, you know, I think they had high hopes for Jesse James. I think they ended up being even pleasantly surprised, you know, even considering those high hopes. I think he came a little further than they thought he would. Some of it, you know, was him getting pressed into duty because of some various injuries to Miller and Spaeth at different times. So he had to play that second tight end role, a role that they probably didn't have cut out for him. I think they'll probably bring in another tight end, whether it's a veteran guy or somebody, you know, at the back of the draft. But make no mistake, I think that the Steelers have every plan on, you know, for the next several years, you know, when they announce the 11 players on offense, Jesse James, tight end, is going to be one of those names announced.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, forget Jesse James never redshirted here. He played as a true freshman right away, played three seasons here. Thus, last season, his rookie season with the Steelers, would have been his senior season, his fourth season at Penn State. So he's a young player.
Right, his fourth season, right?
Yeah, he's a young player that had some growth as the season went along, to his credit.
That's a great point. And just one, you know, just to add on to that, I mean, yeah, there's, you know, right, that would have been his senior year for a lot of guys. Most guys, you know, he'd be going into his final year of eligibility as a college player right now. So,
right.
You know, and now he's, you know, and instead of getting ready for his third season under James Franklin, he's preparing to replace Heath Miller. That's right. A big step.
Right. Again, you know, no red shirt, played 3 years, then left. All right, now let's get to moving forward, because the combine is coming up next week. Now, everyone talks about the Steelers with you know, the defensive backfield and so forth. What are you looking at, and what are a couple of things the Steelers need to look at with the combine coming up?
Well, you know, I think they need, you know, we talked about somebody and you mentioned somebody in the defensive backfield. There's a school of thought that says that they need a safety more than they need a cornerback. You know, the Steelers probably have a better idea of what they're asking their guys to do. Mike Mitchell has solidified one spot in the secondary. William Gay, provided they sign him, has solidified a spot at cornerback. And then to me, after Gay, you know, Steve, I think they've got some nice nickelbacks. I think Ross Cockrell is a nice nickelback. Mm-hmm. I think Antoine Blake could be a nice nickelback. Those guys shouldn't be starting. So I do think they need to find a corner as well. I've been saying that for years, and, you know, they haven't pulled the trigger on one in the first round in quite some time.
Right.
But, you know, to me, those are the two positions that they need the most help at. They probably need some defensive line help as well. You know, Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt had very, very good seasons, but they were on the field probably too much. When pressed, Hayward even said, yeah, you know, another guy in that rotation, you know, would probably be nice. They don't have a whole lot of money under the cap, so whether they bring back a guy like Steve McClendon or not will have a lot to do with what they do in the draft. But I think defensively is where, really where everything begins. Now, this does throw, you know, the Heath Miller retirement does create a need for another tight end. I don't think they have to look for a starter, like we just talked about, but they need to find somebody who can probably come in and help. Other than that, maybe some offensive line depth as well. But this is probably as solidified a team as they've had going into the draft in at least 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, let me ask you about the Golson kid out of Ole Miss, who was the second-round pick last year and, of course, didn't see the field this year. What kind of read do you have on him? As an organization, do they feel that, hey, you know what, this is a guy that's going to help us down the road? Because, obviously, in terms of pure speed, he's got that.
You know, he got hurt so early, and Mike Tomlin is so, you know, negative about non-contact drills that it's really hard to get a read on what he thinks. You know, as the minicamps, you know, went along and people continued to ask questions about Golson, Tomlin's responses were, well, yeah, we feel exactly the way about him as we did when we drafted him. We don't know if he can play in the NFL yet or not. And that's, you know, it's a little bit harsh, but that was intentionally harsh. But I do think there's some truth to that. I just don't think they know. You know, he's small. And again, he may project better as a nickel, as a nickelback. They've got a lot of unsigned cornerbacks right now as well. So, you know, they've got to get their own house in order or figure out what they are going to do internally before they even get into the draft. Now, you know, they think he can help, but again, how much can he help? You know, you can't have, you know, it's nice to have a bunch of guys who can play the nickel position, but you also need a second starter.
College basketball for a moment about Pitt, because obviously they're one of the teams that would be in that bubble talk right now here in the middle of February. I was listening to Sirius XM, I think it was yesterday, and a Pitt fan called one of the shows and was saying, like, how he's felt the program has fallen back. And I trace it really to Barry Rorison no longer being in it, because Barry had that pipeline in New York City, which now John Calipari has access to in Kentucky with Barry. What's the feeling about Pitt basketball right now as to where they are? And the ACC is an awesome conference, but how embraced is it?
Well, you know, I think the interesting thing with Pitt as more time goes by, first of all, a lot of fans are very down on the program and down on Jamie Dixon.
All right.
From an outsider's point of view, that might seem odd. You know, a lot of Pitt basketball fans, listen, there's a small amount of Pitt basketball fans. There's a handful of hardcore Pitt basketball fans who get it and have always got the sport of basketball. There's a lot of other basketball fans who became basketball fans once Pitt got good. They're football fans who go to basketball games.
Gotcha.
And those are the folks, you know, who are saying, you know, what the heck, we used to be going to Sweet 16s and, you know, and now we're crossing our fingers hoping to make the tournament. And that's all true. But at the end of the day, I think the ACC equation comes into it in a big way. I think that as Jamie Dixon has tried to transition this team from the old rugged Big East style to a more athletic, up-tempo ACC style, he now has this hybrid team that isn't as tough and as good defensively as it used to be, but also is not as athletic or as capable of playing up-tempo basketball or as athletic at the guard position, especially as the upper echelon of the ACC.
Right.
The Big East, they're not really an ACC team, and they're kind of hovering in the middle. Your point about the assistant coaches is well taken. It's not just Barry Rorson. Jamie Dixon lost several top-tier assistant coaches a bunch of years in a row. He was able to replace them fairly well for a while, but I think that's caught up to him as well.
Always a pleasure, Tony. Thanks so much for the time. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Steve. You do the same.
Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. By the way, one little addendum to this day in sports history. 50 years ago today, on February 19th, 1966, Penn State officially hired Joe Paterno as the head football coach. 50 years ago today. The 50th anniversary of his first game against Maryland is coming up in September. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
All right, great to have you with us. Yeah, 50 years ago today, Joe was hired as the head football coach at Penn State, and in September, we'll be celebrating the 50th anniversary of his first game. All right, it's all coming up. 800-795-9565 still to come. Jeff Byers on the show today to talk about Penn State wrestling. They wrestle Oklahoma State on Sunday at 5. Daytona 500 this weekend.
And it should be over by then, so the timing should be great.
Something tells me they don't conflict.
I actually watched the Can-Ams last night, I guess there were 150s this year. And the reason they expanded the race was because of the fuel mileage the cars are getting now. So they wanted to make sure they at least had one refill somewhere along the line so they could force a pit stop. And most of the cars did not take tires in either one of the races, just took a splash of fuel, and that was about it. Not many incidents in the race. There was one or two incidents that crashes in each race, but nothing that was quote unquote the big one that we'll probably see on Sunday at these restrictor plate that you do at these restrictor plate races.
It's racing season. You're excited. When does the IndyCar season start?
IndyCar season is about a month away. I believe it's March. I think it's the second weekend in March. I want to say the 12th. 13th? I think it's the weekend of the 13th. Well, the race is the 13th.
Where?
That one will be St. Petersburg, Florida.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the 13th in St. Pete. And then they go back
to 10 seconds.
I know. I only had 10 seconds. And
10 seconds of IndyCar talk.
Darn it. They go back to Phoenix this year, which is really nice.
Ah.
It's really nice. They have a Phoenix race.
Known to some as Pahonix.
Right. Pahonix would be another one. And one other thing real quick, Road America is back on the schedule. Now, if you're a traditional IndyCar fan, Elkhart Lake is one great track to have back on the schedule. Mid-Ohio's there, too. And Steve, the one I want to take you to, the Grand Prix of Boston.
You're abusing this. The Grand Prix of Boston. I've been at the Grand Prix of Boston. It's called Route 128.
No, you have not been at this Grand Prix of Boston.
And believe me, those guys can't survive what I'm talking about. They are good enough drivers to get through that one.
That may be true.
Okay. Penn State wrestling on Sunday.
Kale was not crazy about this to begin with, but I guess as time has gone, he's going to embrace it a little bit more. So that's helped it a little bit. He really wasn't exactly enamored with this thing originally, but
do you mean the matchup or having it at the Bryce or having it where they're having it?
No, the fact that they're doing it, like the whole thing,
the matchup in general,
all the matchups across the board, end of the season, the whole thing. I mean, that originally. Since then, he's kind of warmed up to it. Because they always had these national dual championships then. You know, Penn State hasn't been in it. The national dual championships, the last, what have they done it, 2-3 years? Something like that. Penn State has not entered. Penn State has gone off and done things on its own and has not entered it. So he's never been the... Now you got this at the end. You know, I think Jeff Byers has some very interesting takes on this. Very interesting takes. And I think you're going to find what he has to say is really, really good.
Actually, Steve, I understand where Kale's coming from on this, because I know a lot of people have the same feeling about when the PIAA brought the team tournament in and separated that from the individual titles. Now that they have a team dual title, it happens right in the last 2 weeks of the dual meet season. And it really kind of messes you up, because you end up having potentially a lot of matches right in a row, and then all of a sudden a big break before you get into individual tournament time. So I kind of understand where he's coming from that. I've heard that from several people in the PIAA level.
Now, he's warmed up to this a little bit. He knows the national. He knows the Big Tens and the Nationals are coming up. We'll talk a little bit more about it next half hour.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews. Best selection of beer anywhere. Water, soda, snacks. Oh boy. Roast the peanuts fresh and hot every day. And on top of that, the pickle bar is second to none. And it's the weekend, wide aisles, everything really well laid out. Plenty of help to get the cases to the car. Free parking. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Bozo of the day. Those who feel that Syracuse's NCAA tournament resume should only be evaluated on the games that Jim Boeheim coached. I'm not big on rewarding penalties. That would be rewarding a penalty. Your resume is what your resume is. I think they would get in right now at 18-9 and road wins over Louisville, Duke, Virginia, home win over North Carolina. That's enough to get you in. I mean, that 4-5 when he wasn't coaching, their best win was Texas Southern. Ugh. I think it's something that if the tournament committee sat there and said, well, you know, with Jim Boeheim, they're 14. No, you don't reward penalties. That's our sports bozo of the day. Any quick note you want to have before we get to Jeff Byers?
No, I'm good.
The audience is relieved. All right. If you sat in my chair for the during the news, Kevin can explain how what a tortured experience it was.
No, I don't think it was torture at all. I if I were you, I would have been very interested in everything I was saying.
And you literally did 98% of the talking.
You usually don't listen to me, so you know it was. I couldn't tell the difference, really. I just,
huh?
Exactly.
Let's bring in Jeff Byers. Jeff, play-by-play voice of Penn State Wrestling. Jeff, the deal with Oklahoma State, good idea, publicity stunt. What do you think it is?
I think it is good for the sport. I think it is better than what they were trying the last few years. I don't like especially it being called the National Dual Championship because that is not what it is. But I do think it's a neat idea to have these various matchups at the end of the season that are intriguing to the fans of the respective teams and for the sport as a whole. Wrestling still has this, there are those in the wrestling leadership, I should say, that still have this idea that, listen, we have to compete with basketball, that we have to be right up there with all of the big boys or our sport isn't going to be successful. And it's just ridiculous because there are, with all of the different sports options that are out there, the fact is that the national tournament as it is now for wrestling sells out every year. Yep. It has increased in viewership each of the last 4 years. Yep. And had the biggest TV audience that it's ever had. It's had expanded coverage on ESPN because ESPN realizes that it is a it's a segmented audience, but it is a vastly loyal audience, and it is a growing audience. Mm-hmm. And those are numbers that are significant to ESPN. I don't understand the fascination that that Mike Moyer and some in the sport have with, okay, it's got to be a team concept or nobody's going to buy in. People are already buying in. They are there. They are selling out every year the championship. And again, the TV ratings are good. They're trying to fix something that, in my mind, is not broken and is not even close to being broken. But I do like the idea of having some of these matchups at the end of the year. I do think it creates some logistical challenges, for sure, for some of these schools trying to arrange on short notice. Yeah. These trips that are pretty lengthy, and that part I think needs to be addressed. I really wish the one thing, if they're going to try to borrow ideas from basketball or football, what I would love to see them do is go into a Dallas, Texas, or an Orlando, Florida at the start of the season, all of these basketball tournaments to get played in Anchorage, Alaska, and out in Hawaii, and what have you, and go to states that have strong high school wrestling. Texas has some great high school wrestling. Florida has great high school wrestling. Georgia has great high school wrestling. And these are sports that do not have Division I wrestling universities at the moment. Invite some of the ADs, target a couple of schools that you think you might, within the next decade, be able to talk into adding wrestling as a sport in conjunction with adding another female sports program. And have an event where you invite a Penn State and an Oklahoma State and an Iowa and a North Carolina State or what have you to come down, let the high school kids in those states come see top-notch Division I wrestling at the start of the season. You make it more of a destination for some of the fans, whereas at the end of the year, they're already going to their destination with the national tournament or perhaps the conference championships. But I think if you do something big at the beginning of the season, you're more likely to attract a different audience and try to truly build the sport, which is what those in the leadership positions say they're trying to do. I don't know that a weekend like this, I think it's a good weekend. I don't know that it's going to help grow the sport per se.
Well, I've been talking though in the previous and over the last couple of days, but I do think, you know, it's only one shot, but I think putting it in Madison Square Garden grows the sport.
I don't think there's any question about that. I think that is a fantastic opportunity for the sport, And listen, having Penn State be the leading contender is certainly not going to hurt that at all in a market like New York City. I mean, that combination, I think, is fantastic for the sport in terms of the media coverage. And it couldn't come from a timing standpoint any better than in a year where you're heading into the Olympic Games and you're going to get some extra coverage of the sport anyway out in Rio.
Right, exactly. Now, let's get to the dual meet this weekend. How do you have any read at all from the Oklahoma State people as to whether John Smith's son, J.J., is going to be able to go or not? Because, I mean, that could be an intriguing matchup right there.
Yeah, it would be a great matchup. The couple people I'm talking to that are pretty close to the Oklahoma State program, there's nothing official, but they are very, very doubtful that Smith will wrestle. That is too bad because I do think that's just an intriguing matchup. And, you know, Smith truthfully is one of probably two or three guys right now that I think could at least potentially stick with Jason Nall for a 7-minute match. But Smith is a really good wrestler, and he just keeps learning every time out, and it is a matchup. It would have been a marquee matchup, and but again, all the indications I'm getting from the people out there is that is not going to happen this weekend.
Jeff, where are a couple that you'll be looking at that'll be indicators that will give you a read on some guys for postseason?
Yeah, Jimmy Grubon, Steve, is obviously the biggest concern right now in that Penn State lineup, and when you see what he brings to the mat in terms of his physical capabilities, his quickness, he is a lot stronger than I think a lot of people realize. He has a great grip. I mean, he has all of the tools to be a great wrestler, to be a national champion. And he'll wrestle the number one wrestler in the country, Dean Heil, who is a terrific wrestler. But I really think, Cal Sanderson said earlier this week, in his mind, that weight class is as wide open as any in the country this year. And I think he's right. Even though Heil's undefeated and has been winning the close matches this year, I really think Cal put the number at 10, and I do think there's probably at least 5 to 8 wrestlers that could legitimately go into that tournament, the Nationals, thinking that they can win the whole thing. And truthfully, if Jimmy wrestles up to his potential, he is one of them. Now, he has not wrestled anything close to a national title contender here in the last month or so, but I don't think he's as far away as some think. There's a couple of little things. He's got to move his feet when he gets in on shots and just finish off those takedown attempts, and he's been just not following through the way I think he knows he's capable of, and he's also just not taking as many shots as he normally has, or certainly as he did at the toward the end of last season. So that's still the biggest concern, but it's a great opportunity. Obviously, if he knocks off Pyle here on Sunday, the entire perspective of what Jimmy Grubon is capable of, and really, even if he keeps it to just a point or two and is in it in those final 30 seconds, I think you all of a sudden realize, and maybe Jimmy realizes, hey, I am right there, and I can at least duplicate what I did last year with the fifth-place finish. And 184 is the other one, Steve, that I think is really intriguing for Penn State fans. Nolan Boyd has beaten Matt McCutchen each time they've wrestled collegiately here, but I think Matt is getting a lot better. The one question with him is still getting out from underneath quality guys, and Boyd is certainly a quality guy. He's had his way with Matt in the past on the mat, and that's a big match for Matt McCutchen just to get, I think, his confidence where it needs to be going into the postseason.
Back to Jimmy Grubon for a moment. You and I have done our respective sports on the radio for a long time. So I think after a while you can read just by either body language or in somebody's eyes whether they're confident or not. In other words, like Isaiah Washington's a good example the other night in basketball. In the second half, he made a couple plays, and you could then see body language-wise and in his eyes, his confidence growing exponentially, and he made plays. When you look at Jimmy, are you a bit concerned about where the confidence level is right now?
Yeah, no question, Steve. But it's perplexing because there really is no reason for him to lack confidence. And it's one of those things where you don't know sometimes, obviously, what's going on in a kid's mind and how things are playing out. But when you watch him in the room, that's the perplexing part to me, because I don't think he's lacking confidence when he's in the room, when he's wrestling around with a Zane Rutherford or a Jason Nall or a Jordan Conaway, all great wrestlers in their own right. Jimmy's fine, and he knows he can mix it up with those guys. And again, you're talking about a kid that finished fifth in the country, but you're right, Steve. That confidence is such a fickle thing, and he had a couple of losses early in the season. And Jimmy is a kid that he really is a momentum type of kid. If he can get an early takedown, you can just see him think that, okay, this is my day. And conversely, and I thought he kind of got past this at the end of last year, but it's definitely been a bugaboo again this year, where if he gives up an early takedown, I mean, you see it. He physically, he'll drop his head. And it's just, it's tough because you're watching, you know, Jason Nolf gets taken down and he knows he's going to get the next 10. And Jimmy has that type of capability. I mean, he really does. He's got just unbelievable quickness and great setups. But I think Jimmy is at the point now where he is not trusting himself to work into a takedown. So if the perfect opening isn't there, he's not taking it. He's not grinding his way into 2 points. And that's what he's got to get back to doing, because he's more than capable of doing that. It doesn't have to be a great shot. It doesn't even have to be a good shot for Jimmy Gulabon to ultimately capitalize and get 2 points. And they just have to get him back to wrestling that way. But that confidence is a big part of that, Steve, and there's no question that his confidence has been shaken this season.
Which then brings me to Nico Megalutis. You and I both know that he takes it right to the doorstep and has not been able to clear that hurdle. When you look at him, is it just because guys have been just at that moment a little bit better than him? And do you ever wonder at all that even he knows that line's there, and confidence-wise, he hasn't been able to cross it yet?
Yeah, I think it's a concern. I really do. The confidence with him winning the national title. He knows that he's capable of beating anybody in a given match, but you know, he's had a couple of real close matches this year, and he lost the sudden victory one to Joey Dance, who, in my mind, there's four legitimate national title contenders there at 125, and Joey Dance is one of them, obviously Nico, and the match with Nate Tomasello of Ohio State is ranked number one in the returning national champion. Really, Nico was the aggressor throughout, and ultimately it doesn't matter because he didn't get the takedown when he needed it. But he got in on the shot and was deep on the shot to win it, and then ended up giving it up. And I do think when you get that deep on a shot against a kid that is that good and you are unable to finish, I do think it can play games with you psychologically. The one thing I will say with Nico, though, is he has been a gamer throughout. I mean, he reminds me of Quentin Wright in that he knows when it's Big Ten and more so national tournament time, and there's no question, at least to this point in his career, that he has wrestled his best at the tournament, and he does have a way of kind of psyching himself up and using those close losses. He'll get frustrated at the time and beat himself up and practice that next week. But he does, unlike Jimmy, I think, a little bit, Nico uses that as fuel to, okay, I am going to find a way to get it done this next time. But, again, I think there are four guys there, and I think you could flip a coin between the four. You know, it's going to be a matter of, obviously, who does it that weekend in March. But I think if you wrestled it the next weekend and the following weekend and the weekend after that, you might have four different champions on those respective weekends.
And he is an absolute gamer. Jeff, thanks so much. Appreciate it as always. We look forward to listening to it on Sunday night.
Thanks very much, Steve. I appreciate it.
Jeff Byers, the play-by-play voice of Penn State Wrestling. We'll wrap it up in a moment. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Time to wrap things up for the week. Kevin's already done the already has abused the 10 good seconds of IndyCar
for the entire week next week too.
On behalf of management, I think the word is month. All right.
Filling a need in the Susquehanna Valley by giving you your IndyCar fix.
Do you really think so?
Oh, I've had several people come up to me over the last several months and go, listen, I love the IndyCar talk, and nobody talks about that. I'm here for you.
Well, tell the Andretti's we said hi.
Don't I wish.
It's like,
Really, you have people come up to you and they say how much they love your IndyCar thing?
All kidding aside, yes. I've had people specifically come up. Actually, it was at a couple of the Selins Grove football playoff games this past fall that I was doing sideline. I've had people come up to me and say, hey, really enjoy the talk that you guys do with IndyCar when it comes around. And, you know, we actually like it.
You mean the interviews?
No, everything. Everything.
So, in other words, I shouldn't be fooled by that 0.2 rating?
Listen, nobody talks about this. And when you have a fan, there's an open wheel fan base in this area because of the great sprint racing we've had over the years that may not be there nationwide. We got a lot of great sprint tracks in this region.
Oh, yes, we do. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. By the way, speaking of ratings, the local NHL ratings came out. And the Penguins are usually one. Well, this time they're two, but the rating is still really good for them in Pittsburgh. It's like 5.9 or something like that, which is great. You know which team is number one in local ratings?
I would say Terry the Bruins.
Terry Pegula's Buffalo Sabres.
Wow, the Sabres.
Yeah, it's like 6.2 or some number like that.
Well, they've had a lot of snow up there, so they've been snowed in a lot.
Yeah, but you know what? It's like, well, it's important for them. Their contract's up. And it helps with the negotiations.
I would imagine.
Speaking of hockey, BTN tonight. Yes, that dude between the glass will be me.
Every time you're on, I miss it. I'm going to have to DVR this one.
And we'll talk a little bit about Thon tonight. We've already talked a little bit about this because it's big Thon weekend here. And wrestling is Sunday at 5 o'clock. If you don't have a ticket, it is sold out. That is also on BTN. It's a great showcase for the sport coming up on Sunday.
Isn't there a hockey game basketball tomorrow, too?
Yeah, 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
And basketball tomorrow at 1, on at 12:30. You're saying, okay, so how's this going to work? I'll do hockey tonight, and then I do have to do a post-game interview for hockey after we're off the air. I'll have to do that because they're going to use it in one of the intermissions for the next game. It's a doubleheader tonight. And as soon as I'm done with that, out to find the car and then take the 4-hour drive and get to Rutgers. I don't know. I'm going to guess 1:30 in the morning at the latest. They're not having shoot around tomorrow. I'll get Pat in the morning and then we're on at 12:30 and do the game. 1 o'clock and drive back. So there you go. Now you got hoops tonight.
Yeah. First round AAA District 4 playoffs.
Let me do this. At the Phil Lockhoff Memorial Gymnasium. There you go.
At the Shikellamy Fieldhouse.
Yeah, whatever it's called.
Yeah, that'll be tonight. 6:40 airtime, unusual start time because there is no JV game or a preceding game. So tip-off from the lock will be at 7.
Oh, that would call it the lock.
Nickname, yeah. Or the locky. You know, because that was Phil's nickname, was Lockie. So we've called it the Lockie before.
Okay. Well, you and Dave do a great job always. They've had a terrific season, so congratulations to Tim Ford. What a great year they've had.
Yeah, it's probably the second best season in history right now.
Well, I think it's terrific. It's 7 o'clock tonight, 6:40 the airtime on WKOK. Today's show's been brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, and Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Stock up for the weekend. From the Sunbury Motors Studio, I'm Steve Jones.